It's time for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 3 years has shared with us her decades' research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative and judicial processes in America. And now, here's Mae.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California, and it's Dialogue Conspiracy number 207, July 28, 1975, on a nice warm afternoon out here in Carmel. This week I'm going to take a lot of items that are in the news that pertain to the various conspiracies and cover as many of them as I can within this 45 minutes. And the news is coming in very fast related to the 4 articles that I've published and to a general cloak of concealment of conspiracies and various murders that are taking place and interesting situations that compare to past events that I want to share with you as much time as I have. And then next week I'm going to have Ted Charette as my guest, and I'll do the entire Dialogue Conspiracy on the new evidence in the Robert Kennedy assassination, the overwhelming information coming along to open up that situation. And Ted Charette was the gentleman who made the movie The Second Gun, who has been sort of the father of nursing this thing along and getting the ballistics experts and all the evidence together that a second gun was fired in the Ambassador Hotel. So he'll be my guest for the entire program next week. But I did want to take these isolated events because while they appear isolated in the news, they do all have a relationship in my umbrella cloak of conspiracies. I find interlocking relationships between these events. I do hope that those of you who don't have the articles that I wrote for The Realist will write to me and get them, because you can refer back from time to time to various references I've made on this program. They're available. I charge $1 a copy now for the handling and the mailing and so forth, and 3 of them, the 3 articles for The Realist, are $1 each. The Martha Mitchell story, the Senate Select Committee's part of the cover-up, and why was Patricia Hearst kidnapped? You can order those, I hope you will, if you don't have them. And if you go back and read those articles, it helps to explain some of what I talk about on Dialogue Conspiracy today and events that you'll be reading about tomorrow. The Playgirl article that I did on the burial of Howard Hughes by Aristotle Onassis in December 74 is no longer in print, and I have to get the rights to reprint that myself. As a little summary or introduction before we go into some of the week's news, I do want to say that these 4 articles do cover Watergate East, West, and South in my mind, and that the definition of Watergate is many things to different people. They all have their own interpretation. For me, Watergate in 1972 was a fraction of a secret clandestine government that was operating since World War II that got caught among one of their various activities, which had to do with altering the elections. I said that there were 2 governments existing side by side, one invisible at that point up to then and one visible. The news just last night, Daniel Shore had on the news that the CIA was printing money in Vietnam along with members of organized crime. They were using plates from the government mint that they got a hold of in some way, and that the CIA had its own money printed to the tune of $22 billion. Now, when the Central Intelligence Agency does something that gross and works with organized crime to make $22 billion of their own, they can just keep printing that money endlessly. And the tragedy and the danger of the Treasury not handling the money, but the CIA handling it, as I explained, it is a secret government, or it was, is that they use it for such devious things. They, as it turns out, Daniel Shore mentioned one use would be to buy up drugs in Southeast Asia. Well, with organized crime and the CIA working together, you can imagine that $22 billion of drugs would make a fortune, maybe $100 million once you sold them in the United States. But along with the story, the gross story of their printing at least $22 billion of their own money passed off with plates from the United States Treasury, is that side by side in the morning headlines today, you see crime is the number one problem in the United States, and this $22 billion that's printed in Southeast Asia can procure heroin and cocaine and narcotics, opium, for the black Chicano communities, and drug our underprivileged, instead of offering them job opportunities, reduce them to zombies through importation of drugs. You read the book, The Politics of Heroin, Southeast Asia, The War Conspiracy, and many articles on Air America, the clandestine use of E. Howard Hunt and G. Gordon Liddy in the White House in terms of espionage and narcotics. This came in the testimony of E. Howard Hunt for the Senate committee. He refers to clandestine activities with narcotics. And you think Martha Mitchell saying Richard Nixon is the mafia, and the links of organized crime to the Central Intelligence Agency, and then the horrendous aspect, not only of their printing their own money, but the possibility of purchasing drugs and then bringing them back to create a situation where we on the streets are being slugged. People are keeping up a narcotic habit, breaking into houses, stealing things, killing to keep up these drugs, so that this big narcotic crime wave, this number one problem of crime, is never solved. I mentioned once before in magazines like Time and Newsweek, or the sociologists are not putting the links together of the importation of the government of the very thing which is causing the crime. And when I talked about Watergate in my articles, I said that secret government, and it only got caught. It wasn't over. It got caught in 72. And they're still into many activities. They haven't stopped. They only got their fingers tapped and said this is a no-no, and most of them got off very lightly involved in the Watergate affair. The specific gemstone operation was much larger than Washington, D.C., and Watergate East centered around the cities of New York, Maryland, Washington, D.C., and Virginia, and where the CIA is, Chicago, and Pennsylvania. And those particular cities that I call Watergate East involve such people like G. Gordon Liddy, John Mitchell, John Caulfield, Tony Laskowitz, the Rockefellers, Spiro Agnew, E. Howard Hunt, ITT, the Mullen Associates. There are just a few cities in Watergate East that come through all the news events that involve conspiracies that I will be relating to future programs I've talked about in the past and the news this week. People involved in Watergate East were in the Wallace shooting, the Chappaquiddick affair, the gemstone operations in Washington and from Miami, and the crime, the murdering of various witnesses used by the CIA, the planned violence for the 68 conventions in Chicago, the airline crash of Dorothy Hunt, and the links of that to CBS, the White House, the CIA. That's Watergate East. Watergate South, in my mind, is Miami, Muscle Shoals, Alabama, with the Defense Industry Security Command, Houston, Texas, New Orleans, Dallas, Fort Worth. And Watergate West, we'll talk about again next week with Ted Sheree. In my mind, it's Los Angeles, Las Vegas, San Diego, Sacramento, and San Francisco. San Diego, including La Costa. This is the link of Ronald Reagan to the military. He was in military intelligence, and his relationship to the Defense Industry Security Command, Alabama, our Attorney General Ethel Younger. This area in the West was the home of the SLA, the shootout at Marin County, the murder of George Jackson, the murder of Robert Kennedy, and the links to Washington, D.C. Now, this is only 16 cities. When I marked my atlas, it's on the wall, I have a map of the United States, 16 major cities that are involved in these espionage operations that seem to be the heart of it. The events that I talk about either take place in Texas, in Dallas, or Houston, or Fort Worth, or they're taking place in Washington or the West Coast. And then the countries involved, Mexico, Montreal, Vancouver, Spain, London, James Earl Ray, I think of his trips to Canada, to Mexico, Oswald, to Mexico, the funding of the Kennedy assassination from Montreal to the Bahamas down to Mexico. And this is a brief cloak of events that that involve conspiracy and assassinations that I follow. As I said, I've marked a map, and I think that the international drug traffic is behind a lot of this. I believe one of the motives is international drug traffic, and I have for a long time, and this is a very concealed link of the Howard Hughes Empire to the Onassis Empire, and I think the creation of that money down in Vietnam with our Treasury plates is going to be a big story, but one of the big stories is the links, the real link of Howard Hughes to Onassis, and the interlocking relationship of them to not only the mafia, but to the military. So just as a brief summary, because I pick up new listeners from time to time, and that really is a brief summary, we'll go into some of the events of the news, because they hit these cities, and I did want to mention that it isn't every city in the United States that's involved with conspiracy, but these 16 seem to be the working center or the heart of a lot of what's taking place. The first article that was of interest to me this week was in the San Francisco Chronicle yesterday by Dick Nolan. He talks about the Robert Kennedy case still being in doubt. He said in John Kennedy's case, there was a bullet, if you believe the official story, flew in a manner that defied laws of physics. He said in the Robert Kennedy case, there is supposed to be one gun, but there's disparate bullets, powder burns, and the evidence is completely turned around in that case. But then he went on to say the RFK is more especially our concern because he was killed in Los Angeles. And it's the efficiency and probity of our state and local officials which must be checked. Now, Chief of Police Ed Davis now has applied or is interested in becoming the head of Interpol, International Police, which has strong links to world Nazism of World War II and current pro-Nazi thinking. Ebel Younger, the Attorney General of our state, has made a big push to work for Gerald Ford, which is a frightening revelation, thinking of the way Reagan is moving into position with his Southern strategy. And these public officials want to work higher up on the scale of appointment. And those men were responsible for the cover-up of the Robert Kennedy assassination. So it is very much the concern of the people of California. It's the concern of the whole world, what happened to Robert Kennedy. But we Californians must share the responsibility for this cover-up and expose these officials and not promote them. It would be like promoting Richard Nixon and Patrick Gray after the Watergate with some other honors instead of removing them and John Mitchell from office. These California officials who are known by name and know the role that they had in covering up should be removed from office, and this evidence should be examined. There was a gentleman, and another matter was an ex-CIA attorney who worked for the CIA by the name of Lawrence Houston. Not the Tom Charles Houston of the Houston plan, but the same mentality, and they worked together in the CIA. Houston testified before the Senate committee. He said, as an attorney, he would never recommend the prosecution of a CIA agent even for murder. This was an AP wire service on the 22nd of July, in case you didn't see it. The CIA had an agreement with the Justice Department by which the Justice Department asked the CIA whether or not to investigate certain cases, and the CIA decided who can be prosecuted. And he, Mr. Houston, as a lawyer, said that the CIA agents should be immune from criminal conduct, including murder. And that explains why so many of these murders that are flagrant conspiracies have never been investigated properly, even including the mass murder of the rock stars. And someday we'll do a program on that, on the murdering of musicians. Gerald Ford came out last week and said he saw no need for a new John Kennedy inquiry. He hasn't seen any new evidence, he said, and we shouldn't open it any longer. Gerald Ford was a member of the Warren Commission. He saw evidence when he was a member of the Warren Commission to open up the inquiry. And this is a lie comparable to Richard Nixon, John Mitchell, Mr. Haldeman, Ehrlichman, and I don't know why Gerald Ford is allowed to remain president. After Watergate, we should be impeaching him instead of running him for president. And I think it's shocking that we had elections in 72 and we're allowed to go through that charade. But after 4 years of this, it's even more shocking that Gerald Ford from the Warren Commission is going to slip into office or try to be the next president. He sees no need for an inquiry because he has decided that never should be opened up. But the evidence is overwhelming, as overwhelming as the Watergate. And Gerald Ford, in my opinion, should be impeached from office for concealing this investigation by having Mr. Bailyn, David Bailyn, on the Rockefeller Committee to begin with. The Washington Post and the San Jose Mercury ran a long article, which was of interest in my research on Aristotle Onassis, because I have documents on Onassis, some unpublished, some published, that suggest that his role in international drug traffics was greater than people have imagined, there's an unpublished manuscript I have alleging that it was a major role. After he left Turkey, went to South America and came back to Greece. This article alleges that Aristotle and Onassis is very important to the drug traffic, and I think this should be investigated as long as we're crying about crime in the streets. Now, Onassis, it's true, is dead, but his daughter, after a two-week engagement, was married to somebody, a typical mafia kind of assignment, somebody she wasn't dating or with until 2 weeks ago. And I think the Onassis empire, such as the Tom Pappas door into the White House and his links with the CIA, should be exposed and investigated. Whoever took over the Onassis empire should be put under scrutiny. There's a woman who was evidently behind Aristotle Onassis from his early career, from 1934 to 46. Her name is Ingeborg Dedekind, and she claims that she took Aristotle Onassis and taught him how to dress and eat and act in society. These are direct quotations from a book she just wrote. She said she took a wild animal who used to beat her and taught him how to dress and eat and act in society, from a crude, ambitious tobacco salesman. Tobacco, to a polished shipping magnate. She said he was selfish, jealous, insecure, complex, struck her with his fists, his feet, he beat her, he batted her, but her role was to make him presentable to international circles. She said she taught him about food, wine, clothes, and culture, and this is a very important story, how this person was behind Aristotle Onassis, always in the background, and seemed to make a Pygmalion type of thing to make him presentable to society, and the true story of why or how Jackie consented to marry him is not told yet. I wrote in Playgirls, I say, in 74, December 74, with Stephanie Caruana, an article on the burial of Howard Hughes, and it's been 6 months since that article came out, and a lot has happened since that time. Watergate happened, and Richard Nixon's he started to be bugged in 70, 71. Richard Nixon's demise started about that time period, and Howard Hughes had been his benefactor and helped him through his early political career. Another crony of theirs, Murray Chotiner, a lifelong friend of Richard Nixon's, was run over in suspicious circumstances. William Nolan, the California publisher, died shortly after Murray Chotiner, and Nixon himself said if he went into the hospital, he would be killed. The Hughes Tool Company was then sold to a man who worked there 34 years who never saw Howard Hughes in his life, and the Soma Corporation, which handled the Hughes contracts, the Air West, and various Hughes contracts, had 5 board of directors, and no Hughes name is on that Soma Corporation, as I understand it. A new book came out this week by Jimmy the Greek in Las Vegas. It was reviewed in the San Francisco Chronicle. There are several sessions. Interestingly enough, Jimmy the Greek said he worked for Howard Hughes. If there is no Hughes, and there was no Hughes in Vegas in all that time period, and if the elections were manipulated, if a group of people said, I want to own the president, the Supreme Court, buy up a state, if they were behind the manipulation of various assassination or conspiracies, it would be very convenient for Jimmy the Greek to know who's going to win and how, and project and make more money even projecting by the manipulation of these particular witnesses. It came out this week that Jimmy the Greek, the great election guesser, happens to be a paid employee of Hughes. He says he never met Hughes in his life. In his book, he confirms that Robert Mayhew, the link of the Hughes empire, both to the CIA, the FBI, and the mafia, never met Hughes in his life. Jimmy the Greek alleges that Jean Peters, his wife of 6 years, never slept with Howard Hughes. In my article, I said that she wed him after his disappearance, after he no longer was anywhere in the United States, and divorced him after the date that I said Hughes was buried. The last picture of Howard Hughes, according to Jimmy the Greek, which I also had information about, was in 1946, and that's a long time ago. The only person in 20 years who claims to have seen him actually was the president of Nicaragua, and even if he did see somebody and visit with him at Nicaragua, the night of that fail earthquake, for so very many people, the only plane out was a Hughes plane. He wouldn't know who that was, because 20 years ago, Hughes was a different person. This man may have talked to somebody, but this was a man with 40 with 20 doubles, and he is claiming that the president of Nicaragua, that he had seen him. I think it was interesting linking Las Vegas and Hughes and the drug empire, Vietnam. There's a lot of loose threads around here, but one of them is Mrs. Ann Nolan, the widow of the California senator. He's a former senator and publisher, William Nolan. As I say, that was one of Nixon's cronies that died very quickly after Murray Chotiner. The widow of this publisher and California senator just applied this month for 11 slot machines to run Joey's Happy Valley Inn. She wants a license to run a small operation in a Las Vegas bar. This William Nolan died a strange death, identical to Congressman Mills in Maryland. Congressman Mills went off the stable at 7 in the morning, was found dead, allegedly a suicide. He was alone and under very suspicious circumstances, and William Nolan had a lake or water. He allegedly drowned or died right at the edge of the water, and very conveniently at a time when he broke the first story in the SLA against the wishes of Randolph Hearst, he was carrying the story in the Oakland Tribune. There were links of Nolan to exposing the SLA in his Oakland paper. There were links of Nolan to Nixon's cronies for many, many years. And I think it's very strange that his wife is running a Las Vegas bar, a slot machine operation up in Las Vegas at this time. He was married for many years to another person, and this is a recent wife, and she's now up at Happy Valley Inn running Joey's. The UPI ran a story that should have made the headlines this last week, and very quietly, it was a 2-inch column on about page 10. Didn't get much play. And after the murder of Sam Giancana just 2 weeks ago, you would think it would make the headlines, because the boss of the bosses of the underworld died in New York City. His name is Carlo Gambino. Carlo Gambino, in this little 3-inch column in the newspaper, is described as a reputed underworld boss of all bosses. Now, just a few weeks ago, to remind you, Sam Giancana was to go before the Senate Select Committee on the very wild but confirmed allegations that he worked for the CIA, that the underworld boss from organized crime worked with the Central Intelligence Agency. He had been hired with Mr. Rosselli to kill Castro, and goodness knows what else he did with the Central Intelligence Agency. And the conduit, the middleman, was Mr. Mayhew, who formerly was with the FBI, with the CIA, and was an employee of the Hughes Empire. Hughes did not exist at that date, but Mayo was a contact man. And just through another mysterious circumstance where the guard left for 20 minutes, Sam Giancana died, and very strange circumstances of the weapon, and the Senate committee said maybe we should protect our witnesses next time. Well, not only did Giancana die, but Carlo Gambino is a big name for anyone who knows the mafia. And the lack of space following Giancana's name made me very, very suspicious. As I say, Sam took over the leadership. This particular Carlo Gambino took over the leadership of the mafia in 1969 after Vito Genovese died. And I claim that the organized crime was used in conjunction with Jack Ruby, who also worked with the CIA, FBI, and Dallas police. Jack Ruby was thick with organized crime. And Carlo Gambino had the leadership of the mafia in 69 after Vito Genovese died. Now, the stories of Jack Ruby linked to mafia are many, but I want to read you a section of Jack Ruby's links to Vito Genovese of the mafia. And it was after Genovese was put in prison that Gambino took over. And I'm wondering if Gambino was killed just this week, because as the evidence comes out that not only did the mafia use an agent, was used by the CIA to kill Castro, Jack Ruby's links to the mafia and the CIA also are very tight, and maybe it was necessary to kill Carlo Gambino at this time. He conveniently sunk to his death at a time when Ruby's links to organized crime and Ruby's links to the CIA were being investigated. Now, in my research of the Warren Commission hearings, I have volume 14. I'm going to read you some pages of volume 14, pages 331 to 364, for those of you who are researchers. And it's a testimony of Nancy Perrin Rich. and she testified June the 2nd, 1964. And her testimony is the links of Jack Ruby to organized crime, to the anti-Castro community, to Tony Genovese, who was the head of the mafia. Now, if Ruby had those links at that time, they probably, even though Ruby was dead, the CIA and the mafia knew that they had to do away with Gambino this time as these investigations are opening up. So I want to read a little bit of this testimony. Just before I begin to give you a few sentences of Nancy Perrin Rich's testimony, which is very interesting, I may say that Mr. J. Lee Rankin, the head counsel for the Warren Commission, sent a letter to all members of the Warren Commission staff March the 10th that they should have their working papers completed in April and their final papers done by May the 10th, 1964, and turned in. And Nancy Perrin Rich's testimony wasn't dated until June the 2nd. So the Warren Commission hearings were taking place behind closed doors with attorneys on June the 2nd, but the working papers on the assassination of who killed Kennedy were in a month earlier, so they didn't even intend to use this testimony, so it doesn't come out in the Warren Report, any suggestion at all. But this is the kind of information that Nancy was saying. First of all, she claimed that when she got a letter from the Warren Commission to her hometown up in Massachusetts, it was open, that the local people knew it, the FBI knew it, and she wanted for the record that her mail was open. Nancy had several husbands. Her second husband, she married at Lackland Air Force Base. He's retired now, but he was in the military, and she was part of the military for quite a while. Her third husband, Robert Perrin, died in August 62. It's about 3 or 4 months after Lee Harvey Oswald returned from the Soviet Union and was living in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. But according to my work, the assassination was very much into operation. The plans were going in August 62. Mr. Perrin, her husband, had been described as having many skills, an author, mechanic, foundry worker, but he also worked for Jack Dragma, now in San Quentin, and he did everything to handle it, from handling Dragma's call girls to heavy work as a body work, and she meant heavy work for this mafia chief. Dragma of Syndicated Mafia was a friend of Mickey Cohn, Virginia Hill. This was Nancy Perrin Rich's husband. He was a professional soldier. He ran guns for both sides. He sent guns to Franco. He assisted Franco in the Civil War over in Spain, and he assisted the anti-Castro Cubans sending guns into Cuba and getting anti-Castro Cubans to Miami. He died of arsenic poison. This was in August of 62. He ate too much, she testified. The coroner's report said the arsenic was voluntarily consumed, and he had worked for public relations office. She had worked for public relations office in New Hampshire. Nancy was working in the East Coast when she got a call to go work in Dallas, and she was advised to go to the police department, and she went to the police department where she was introduced to Jack Ruby. Her first assignment was to work for Jack Ruby in his nightclub, in the Carousel Club. Her previous work before she went to work for Jack Ruby was in police departments in Boston, the DA's office in Boston, the DA's office in Sacramento. She worked for Mr. Oscar Kissel, who's now a judge in Sacramento. She worked with the Hayward police, the Oakland police. She arrived in Dallas in July 72. They left town suddenly in August, shortly before her husband died. Now, she worked in all these police departments, and as I say, her husband at the same time was thick with Mr. Dragna, the organized crime, Virginia Hill, and Mickey Cohn. She went to the police department for her job. She met Jack Ruby, and she also met Officer J.D. Tippett there, the one who was shot at the time of the assassination, November 22, 1963. She was working in what was called public relations, which has now been exposed. Many of the public relations firms are CIA fronts. This was revealed by Lewis Tackwood, who wrote the Glasshouse Tapes, and said how closely the CIA works in the police department, also in public relations. And Nancy also worked with the Associated Press and told them she was in town. She was taken by a detective, Rayburn, to get a job at Jack Ruby's club. A detective took this woman whose husband was in contact and working with Jack Dragma, and she worked with the police departments, and she was taken to Jack Ruby's club in the fall of 62, where she became a bartender at the Carousel Lounge and Commerce Street, and she served special drinks. The police department free on the house. And at a meeting with Ruby, there was a discussion of running guns to give the Cuban refugees, the anti-Castro Cubans. A group was bringing Cubans into Miami, and Jack Ruby had friends in organized crime who had gaming tables in Miami and resented Castro taking them. They wanted the gaming tables back. They wanted to help the CIA in their invasion of Cuba, and Jack Ruby was filtering weapons or giving them money for this gun running into Cuba. Nancy said that she was to receive, she and her husband received $10,000 for an operation. They were to get a boat, and an Army colonel was involved with them, an Army colonel from the military, helped them with this gun running, and the Army colonel worked with Jack Ruby, who was also working with organized crime and the police department. You see the interlocking relationship of the organized crime, the military, the CIA, and the police, from these various cities, locking together and working as conspirators. They work in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Sacramento, Dallas, and the New Orleans, Miami. Nancy said, I went to a meeting. She was working for Jack, and then she quit. She was going to do something else, and she quit working for Jack Ruby. They'd had a fight, and she was going to prosecute him for assaulting him. The police said, if you touch Jack Ruby, you have to get out of town. Nobody touches Ruby. But she knew him very well, and they were waiting for their $10,000 for their gun running and bringing the anti-Castro Cubans, and she testifies. This is volume 14. Who comes in but my little old friend, Jack Ruby? You could have knocked me over with a feather. And she said that the military was supplying weapons. Our military was supplying weapons for this operation. She said her impression was that Ruby was bringing in the money for the operation because he had a big bulge in his pocket when he arrived, and the bulge was gone when he went out. And they had a second meeting arranging to get rifles from the military, stolen military rifles that were coming from the base through the Army colonel working with Ruby and her husband. Now the doorbell rang, and in comes, at a third meeting, it was Vito Genovese's son, Tony Genovese. And she says she was scared because there was the military, Tony Genovese, the mafia, and the gun running, and Nancy said she was scared, so she grabbed her old man and rented a truck and got their belongings out of Texas and ran to New Orleans as fast as they could, because they didn't mind working with the military, they didn't mind working with Ruby. When Tony Genovese got into the operation, they got out of town as fast as they could. Well, it didn't work getting out of town, because her husband ingested arsenic just a short time afterwards and died, probably because he was a witness to this whole transaction and couldn't get out of it. But there you see the interlocking relationship of the Warren Commission keeping this from being told. And now this last week, as the evidence is coming out that Ruby is linked to organized crime, you see that another mafia boss is gone, and not even a headline. Again, I think it's amazing that Carlo Gambino died in New York City this week, and it didn't get more than 2 or 3 inches in the news. I take 8 papers a day and get clippings from all over, and I haven't seen a thing about it. But he did inherit the mafia from Genovese when he died, so he knew the chain of command and the various operators and could have been a witness to the links of Jack Ruby to organized crime and the kind of thing that Nancy Perrin Rich was talking about to the Warren Commission. And it's printed right there in volume 14, and they never use this information. Well, there's another article in the paper this week about Thurl Wheeler. He's been in the news the last few weeks. Thurl Wheeler is one of the men from the SLA who knew Donald DeFries for just 1 month at Vacaville Prison and walked out of there August the 2nd, 1973. He says he was mowing the lawn outside the walls, and he was just walked away. He was strolling. That was in the paper this week. He's strolling and walked away. And Thurl Wheeler then went to Houston, Texas. Again, the name Houston, Texas. Working for a security system, he got a clearance with the company. He passed a local and federal authorities for the place that he was working. He's working in Houston, Texas. He doesn't want to be extradited. Thurl Wheeler was a gentleman who identified himself to Donald DeFries 1 month for 1 month in Vacaville. Then he, in quotes, walked away in August. DeFries left Soledad Prison in March of 73. Thurl Wheeler allegedly met Donald DeFries 20 times in the Bay Area, and then he got his ass out to Houston, Texas before the killing of Dr. Marcus Foster. He played the exact role of George de Morenschild, who was with Oswald constantly and giving him money and funding for him and his wife, and then got to Haiti in April, and John Kennedy was killed in November 63, so he could be physically removed from the scene of the crime. Wheeler doesn't want to come back. He doesn't want to be extradited to California. And yet he's claiming that he had no sympathy with Donald DeFries at all, but he's saying that I'm no snitch, and he's not going to tell what happened. Unfortunately, nobody from the SLA from the inside has spoken up yet and told the real truth about the SLA being formed by the CIA and how they got their orders or money. My Watergate story broke in August 72 and only became legitimate in March of 73 when James McCord started talking 9 months later. I wish that the three black men involved in the SLA story who were CIA agents, one is Chris Thompson Westbrook, and the other is Thero Wheeler, if those three men only feared fascism as much as I did and thought about a Gestapo. That's what McCord said when he started talking. He feared a Gestapo in the United States. If these three black men would ever come clean and tell the truth, we'd break that SLA story, the SLA, the CIA. But he doesn't want to be extradited. And it's very interesting, again, if I mark the map and make comparisons between these conspiracies, which I always do, the Sharon Tate, LaBianca murders were done in Los Angeles, and Charles Watson, who did all those killings, not only came from Texas and was out in California, but he went back to Texas and stayed there and hid, and the judge protected him so that he wouldn't be tried with Charles Manson and wouldn't be associated with those murders, even though he was in the house, did the 7 killings, and it wasn't Charles Manson at all who did any of the stabbings. But Charles Watson didn't want to be extradited either, and he was held back in Texas. Charles Watson had contact with two lawyers, Perry Walshen and David LaLoach. Now, LaLoach, the attorney for Charles Watson, was a Republican candidate for the state assembly in 1969 that year. He's a former county chairman for the California Young Republicans. He represented Watson in a civil case. He says Watson had been in his office more than 30 times. This was in the Los Angeles Times in December 13, 69. It'd be interesting to pry open what Charles Watson was doing with a Beverly Hills attorney who's a young Republican candidate, a former county chairman for Young Republicans, and then he flies to Texas where he doesn't want to be extradited. This all sounds familiar because Jim Garrison, when he arrested Clay Shaw and wanted a trial, wanted various witnesses extradited to Louisiana for the trial, and they were protected in their home states. David Ferry was murdered, but Gordon Novell went to Ohio, Sergio Acacia Smith went to Texas, Mr. Bradley came to California, and John Conley then was governor of Texas and wouldn't extradite Smith. Regan was governor here and he wouldn't extradite Bradley. And so we have Thero Wheeler of SLA fame hiding in Houston, Texas, wanting to work. He had an alias, Bradley S. Bruce. He went through a complete Houston security system. He says he has a compelling reason to leave California. He doesn't want to come back. So it'll be interesting to see. He isn't charged with anything, even though he knew DeFries and was with DeFries many, many times. And his giving him money claims that DeFries forced him under duress or extortion, but he was handing him sums of money, and that kept DeFries going from the time he was out of prison until the kidnapping of Patty Hearst. And the same kind of tactical support and then fleeing the scenes protects people on a need-to-know basis, and the conspiracies keep continuing. Just as a social article last week I read in, I think it was Herb Kaner, one of the columns in San Francisco, that Randolph Hearst and Catherine Hearst were dining at Girardelli Square in San Francisco with Mr. and Mrs. Scott. Simple little social item. The Scotts allegedly provided the van that got Patty Hearst out of town when the six SLA were burned, provided a safe house in Pennsylvania for them. The grand jury doesn't want to question the Scotts in Pennsylvania or in California. The FBI says we don't want them. We've interviewed 23,000 other people. So it's very interesting that the Hearst are having dinner with the Scotts and probably discussing where Patty is today. And one of these days when everybody cools off, this thing will subside and the charade will be over. But the penalty of allowing this thing to be concealed and not going before a grand jury and answering these questions is a future repression of creating bogus left-wing groups and terrorists to scare people in the community, create bombings and terrorism that will continue long after Patty Hearst is forgotten. There's another article in the news this week, the CIA infiltration of church groups told. Now, many of you that have heard my shows before or read my articles know that I've said for a long time the CIA uses the churches as a front operation. They not only print their own money, but they use the churches. This article says that the CIA regularly infiltrated church groups and missionaries. This is an Associated Press story. It says, abroad and at home, one man on the payroll of the CIA in Saigon received millions of dollars. A bishop, in 1971, the officer would fly from Saigon for secret meetings with him. The CIA is probing the investigation of the relationship of the missionaries and the CIA. There's a reference here to Bolivia, where the CIA agent had all sorts of contacts with the agents, and the priests were doing spying. Another Jesuit priest, Belgian priest, received $5 million from the CIA to help Eduardo Frei get elected president of Chile. There's a book, CIA Myth and Madness, that on page 57, page 73, talks about Mormon missionaries that are trained, recruited for the church. Then they're sent back by the CIA to the country where they did their missionary work earlier as then CIA agents. This is like Philip A.G., who tells, before he joins the company, inside the company, he really has joined, but he's told to go into the military for 3 years, and then you go to the CIA. So the military is training and giving his preparation first, but he's really a CIA those 3 years. Well, the Mormon missionaries are trained and recruited by the church, learn the language, and they're sent back as agents to those countries. I talk about the missionary, Albert Osborne, that sat on the bus going to Mexico with Lee Harvey Oswald, who ran a school for assassins down in Mexico, that they were not church people at all, funded by the FBI. And I've talked about the use of the World Council of Churches, the Greek Orthodox Church that brought Marina Oswald in and set up her connections to the far right-wing oil people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and then took care of her financially with dresses, money, clothing through the Greek Orthodox Church. And I've alleged for many, many years, ever since Robert Kennedy was shot, that the Sirhan family was brought in by the Greek Orthodox Church when they left Palestine in the early days before it was Israel, the time of the battle. It just became Israel. The country became Israel. The Sirhan family were Lutherans, and there were many children. And all of a sudden, they came into a lot of money, and they were all flown to Pasadena under the Greek Orthodox Church, which was a spy agency. The Jordanian agency in Washington, D.C. had no record of the Sirhan family. And their transportation and the use of that family was through the Greek Orthodox Church, and they were brought to Pasadena. So the church-run educational operations in Colombia, in Bolivia, in Brazil, are just a few of the agencies. They work inside the United States in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, maybe in Carmel. I mean, we are not sure how many areas are infiltrated with church people, but the volumes in the Warren Commission hearings list some of the churches that were funded by the FBI, and these should be taken to the committees, the Senate committees investigating now. The documentation is printed between their own covers, and examine the missionary down in Mexico, which is probably closed now. But that's the Murder Incorporated that Lyndon Johnson was talking about, that the CIA ran down in the Caribbean. It was in Mexico, funded by the various churches in California, Tennessee, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, money sent to schools for assassins disguised as churchmen. Well, I have about 12 or 14 more important articles here, but our time is up this week. As usual, it goes pretty fast. I couldn't cover them all. But next week, we'll have Ted Charette with us, and we'll talk about the Robert Kennedy assassination. Take care, and I'll see you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 10 years has been researching the facts behind political assassinations and conspiracies in this country. Dialogue Conspiracy originates with KELRB-FM in Carmel, California.